Andy, we are so excited to have you join us today. It's interesting to see that you published your own book, right? And we're just curious all about what this is and who you are. You want to tell us a little bit?
Absolutely. I would love to. So thank you first and foremost for having me on the podcast today. I was so looking forward to meeting you all and talking a little bit more about my new book, Lead with Hope, Building a System of Self-Efficacy. And I wrote Lead with Hope during the pandemic, actually. That's when it started. During that time in my life, I was needing that sense of community because a lot of us were working from home and a lot of the teachers were working from home. At that time, I was a principal at Sangamon Valley Middle School. And I connected with a group called Teach Better. And we started talking about all things administration, virtual learning, the pandemic, just a really good community to connect with. And they supported me during that time. And I met a lady, her name is Libby Chan. And Libby at that time was the Teach Better. She kind of oversaw the blog for Teach Better. And she invited me to start writing articles. So that's kind of where it all started. I wrote a four-part series on leading with hope, and hope stands for habits, optimistic outlook, purpose, passion, perseverance, and excellence. And it's just a way that I believe we can build cultures of hope in our school through an intentional practice of self-reflection to build self-efficacy. And we need that. We need that belief in ourselves so that we can lead others well. And so it started in the pandemic, and then fast forward, my book launch was on May 5th of 25, and it has been an amazing journey.
Gosh, Randy, that's so, I want to hear more about this Teach Better. Like, how did you find that? What was that journey like? Did you know someone that was in that? What, tell me more about Teach Better.
Yeah, just like most things in education, I knew somebody who knew somebody, and they connected me to the Teach Better Mastermind, and it's specifically for school leaders. And so I just started jumping on their virtual meetings once a week and connected with some really amazing school leaders and educators. And then as it started unfolding, I was able to meet some people in the what they call the edupreneur space. So it's basically entrepreneurs that were educators, and they have then went out and done their own business in this area. And I stayed plugged into that community, and I'm still plugged into it. I don't go as frequently as I used to, but it provided to me what I needed during that time, which was community.
So is it a local operation that you like go in person and talk with people? Is it a virtual space?
Yeah, it's all virtual.
Okay.
It's all virtual. Yeah. And then Teach Better Now, they offer different masterminds, and most of them are virtual as well. But then they also have things like there's an individual there, Chad, and he has created a system called the GRID framework. And so it's for lesson planning for teachers. And they go out and they do professional development and consulting with schools. So it's, a lot of different services that you can get for your school or your district, but I have stayed connected with that Teach Better Mastermind just for the sense of community, and that's all free.
So I'd love to hear like where the Lead with Hope, like how that came about. Did you start with these ideas of these things you wanted to kind of tie together? Did you love the word hope and you wanted to figure out how to break that down? Like, tell me a little bit about that process.
Great question, Beth. Kind of all of the above, to be honest with you. So whenever I started my journey of self-reflection and building my self-awareness, I had to go back to the first trauma I experienced. And when I was 15, it was a rainy Saturday in May. I was getting ready for prom. My mom and dad were both entrepreneurs and they were working their business. My brothers decided that they were bored and they wanted to go on a horseback ride. So that's setting the stage for you a little bit. You know, I felt like Cinderella. I had a chore and I had to clean the house before I went to the ball. So my mom came home that afternoon, but before she came home, my brother Dustin, that was our little brother, he ran into the kitchen and he said, "Bub fell in the creek." I was annoyed because he had muddy feet and he just dirtied my clean floor that, you know, that I had just cleaned. But, and I didn't think anything of it, a creek. Sure. You don't drown in a creek.
Yeah.
It's just
you
a
fall
little,
in creeks all the time. Yeah, not a big,
absolutely.
Yeah. Like, okay.
Not
yeah.
Not a big
mm-hmm.
deal.
Oh yeah.
So my mom came home. She said, "We're going to go look for Bub. You go on to prom. We'll see you tonight when you get home." And fast forward, we got to prom and there were people talking about the fact that my brother had drowned. And so my prom date and I went to the bridge overlooking the creek, and everybody, it looked like the entire town was there looking for him. The next day was Mother's Day and they found his body on Monday. He had drowned, and I don't know how, but they found him about a mile down the creek bed. And
oh wow.
Fortunately, my story doesn't end there, because out of that tragedy emerged goodness. You know, like I said before, our town rallied around our family. They showed up for us. They came out and they searched day and night. And then the school community, the teachers, and especially the students in his class, they were amazing. They got on a bus and they came to his funeral. They created a memory book that really did capture his mischievous spirit. He was the class clown, but he had such a good heart. He was such a good boy. And they wrote stories about that. And that really lifted us. It gave us hope for a better, you know, a brighter future. And it gave me kind of that sense of purpose that I wanted to give back, and I wanted to provide that for families in my career. And so I became a school social worker, and then a principal, and then a superintendent. And in the role as superintendent, I just felt increasingly disconnected from my purpose. And I was doing things it wasn't fueling my passion. So for me, not only did I love the word hope, but it also gave me the habits, the mindset, that purpose piece to live a life of excellence. Because at the end of the day, we don't want people living lives that they feel like they have to escape from. In our country, anxiety is on the rise, depression is on the rise, burnout, hopelessness. People need hope in our world today. And so we have to build a system where change starts on the inside, and then that light shines from within. And so that's what I hope to put into the world. I want to give people that sense of hope, but also a system of hope to build that better future.
I like that mm-hmm. word.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you're Thank making you. Me think, Brandy, right now, mm-hmm. being a principal or a leader, mm-hmm. you know, around the country and actually around the world has become so difficult. I just found an yes. article from New Ireland. It was in Ireland mm-hmm. where they talked about the leadership, even being a principal, you know, across in Ireland, they talked about it's very, they called it unsustainable for a long term.
Yeah.
And it made mm-hmm. me think of you as mm-hmm. we knew that this podcast was coming up. And so just with all of the things happening from all different directions, be it politics, be it yes. Different curriculums, you know, the gamut within mm-hmm. education, what is one thing that you would really say to a leader that's listening to us today? Because mm-hmm. A lot of times when we give our time to be able to listen to people like you, we're like, what are those pieces? What are those easy little nuggets yeah. that I could mm-hmm. take and really share, work within myself, but also share within those I'm leading?
Yeah. And typically, Jerry, whenever I answer that question, I answer it simply with just that intentional practice of self-reflection. But, you know, as a learning leader, I am constantly reading books and listening to podcasts and consistently trying to get better day after day. And recently I picked up the book, How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. And
that's like an oldie but goodie, right?
Oh, it's one that you should go back to time and time and time again.
Yes.
And it made me think of a story in my leadership as a superintendent. And it's something that I wish I could push the rewind button and go back. And there was one of the staff members, I'll just leave it at that. One of the staff members came to me and she was criticizing me for something. And it was simple in my mind, she was wrong. And so I told her she was wrong. But you know what? Reading this book reminded me that it's all about building relationships. And you don't build relationships by telling people they're wrong. So as a leader, one of the very simple things that we can do is avoid criticism and condemnation. That old saying that you praise in public and you criticize in private, I would even take it a step further, reframe that. It doesn't have to be criticism, because one of our basic needs is we want to feel important. Why should we rip somebody's self-esteem and self-respect from right underneath them? Some people, that's all they have. And we don't know the baggage they're carrying. So as a school leader, avoid that criticism and condemnation. And let's build cultures of hope where we're lifting each other up, consistently lifting people up and focusing on a strength perspective and building communities where people want to be there. That's a basic human need. They want to feel important and they want to belong. And as school leaders, we have the power to give that to them.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, and it makes me think of in any leadership role, people have feedback for you, right? Mm-hmm. And it's being for us to be able to receive that as the leader and not take it personal. And I know human nature, we're human. And many times when it hits that little spot, it takes courage and discipline with what you're talking about, Brandy, because our world and the principal role, campus leader, it goes at a fast pace where everything is coming at you nonstop. And so just hearing you say that, and sometimes as leaders and as people, we need to, it's not getting permission for that, but it's like reiterating, it's okay. It's okay to be able to say, I need some time.
Yes. And let me be clear. I mean, the other piece of that is when people come to you, if they're yelling at you or screaming at you or dehumanizing you in any way, you can kindly say to them, I see that you're very angry or you're very passionate about this subject. Mm-hmm. One of my boundaries is that I'm not going to allow somebody to yell at me. So why don't we push pause and come back to this when you're calmer? Because in education, sometimes people feel like, well, I'm at work, so I have to take this. I have to let them vent. I have to let them, you know, just verbally abuse me. You don't. That's self-respect. And we have to respect ourselves in order to respect others.
Yeah. And model that self-respect.
Yes, 100%.
Teach people how to be able to say, this is not appropriate. I don't allow people to speak to me this way. I really want to hear you. I want to understand you. When you're speaking at that volume, it's really difficult for me to understand.
Yeah.
So that I love that idea of using those conversations to connect, to hear, to listen, without just feeling like that, well, this is my job. My job is to be the person that gets yelled at the school. I feel like a lot of school leaders feel that way. If I'm getting yelled at, that means my teachers aren't getting yelled at so they can teach better.
Yes. And unfortunately, just the opposite is happening. If you as the school leader are accepting that kind of behavior, then it's okay for me to talk to everybody else like that.
Yes.
And it's not. It's not okay.
Right.
No.
Mm-mm. Yeah.
There is something about, and I don't know if you've noticed this, Brandy, but since pandemic, like post-pandemic, it feels, and I remember in the principalship, it's like the Band-Aid was ripped off. where there was always probably an undercurrent of the way people would talk. Even the keyboard warriors weren't nearly, that's what I call them when they're behind the email or posting. But there's something about that post-pandemic that it's like, it is just, the gates have been opened. And so this is super duper timely for you to be sharing just the piece about having hope and being able to really set those boundaries in a very professional way, because as the leader, everyone's looking at you, and the way you respond, the way you allow people to respond to you does set the tone when you're at a campus.
And Jerry, I love that you bring that up, because if you go back and you look at the mental health statistics, as a social worker, I'm always looking at a former social worker. I'm always looking at those statistics, and specifically I'm interested, especially in the work I'm doing now, in anxiety and depression amongst leaders. And you can see spikes. You see a huge spike in the pandemic, and then it went down, but it's going back up. And I expect that trend to continue to go up. And the reason I believe that that is happening is because during the pandemic, things were very uncertain. It was very stressful. And then we came out of that, and we had an unrealistic expectation that things were to go back to normal. And they didn't. Nor do I think that they should, because it's a great opportunity. Winston Churchill says, let no good crisis go to waste. We need to take that pandemic and learn some valuable lessons and put them into practice to make our systems and our school districts and our organizations better. But there are signs, if you pay attention, in every business. I've been to a hospital. I was recently at it wasn't a doctor's office, but it was a like a DMV or something. And there's those signs. We will not tolerate. No, it was a Lowe's. I'm sorry. I was at Lowe's. And it says, we will not tolerate verbal abuse. And so I asked the clerk that was checking me out. I said, do you see an increase in verbal abuse here at Lowe's when you're working with customers? And he said it so beautifully. He said, you know, I work with contractors a lot, and I can understand why they would get emotionally distressed or upset whenever things don't work out. He really had empathy for the people that he was working with. And can you imagine if we had empathy on both ends? We wouldn't have that conflict. We wouldn't have that stress and that angst. But our world didn't go back to the way it was. And so people are feeling uncertain, and then you add politics and you add mandates and you add initiatives to that, and that stress level just keeps going up higher and higher all the time, and people are struggling.
Then, you know, kind of shortly after the pandemic, it felt like, okay, if we just have kids in school, that's enough. If we're just getting these kids fed, that's enough. And now it feels like, okay, now we need to close that gap. Now it needs to go back to normal. Now there's no, like, we're done. And I feel like, no, like, that was a real giant thing that happened. And there are going to be effects that kind of ripple throughout time for a long time. And we're not, I feel like in education, it's like, oh, nope, that's over. We're done. Like, let's hit it even harder than we did before to catch up. And we can't. It's not sustainable.
And then, Beth, you add this. Cell phones. And you look at the statistics that, have you heard of the book, The Anxious Generation?
Oh, love it. Love, love, hate, love. Yes. I have a 12-year-old. So I am all, we are just starting to fight the desire for TikTok.
And when you think about, and I, as an adult, you know, as an adult who understands what the research says about cell phones and technology and social media and all of that, that addiction is real. That draw is real. And then we have kids that are in their formative years trying to understand who they are, and they're fighting that addiction and that dopamine rush and all of the things that go with cell phones. And so I believe that the anxiety and the depression is closely tied to the cell phones. And overall, I mean, the theme of this whole conversation so far has just been putting those boundaries in place and treating each other with kindness and respect to create that hopeful future that we want for our children.
Yeah, and the importance of community. Like, that's so, the more we're on our phones or our devices or these kids now, like, having relationships with AI chatbots are just being further and further removed from that protective factor of community.
Well, even, I mean, if you think about it, even, I mean, my son is now 22, but when he turned 16, that wasn't that long ago, there was not the desire to go and get his driver's license, because they, back in our day, the communication was like, we physically had to be in that space. And now they're connected digitally. So there wasn't a need to, I mean, I don't know about you, Beth, but yours aren't old enough yet, but it's interesting when they get to driving age. It's not the desire of back when we had. So Brandy, and thinking of the other leaders listening to us right now, and they're ready, they're probably going to be, hopefully this will go out before school starts, where they have an opportunity to listen and really hit the ground running to build that culture. What would be some tidbits on hope that you would be like, if you're a principal, you were a superintendent, but you really want to frame, you know, that kickoff when they come back is like, really sets the tone. And so you're like, all right, guys, here we go. This is what, these are the few things that you could do to set, you know, set that framework in a positive way with your staff and families.
I mean, it goes back to that relationship, Jerry. And I think that what our people need in our school districts, they need to know you as a human being. They need to know you on a more personal level. And so I would say provide that emotional and psychological safety through an intentional practice of getting to know your people, not just saying, hi, how are you, but rather talking to them about what's going on in their work world, but also what's going on in their home world, and really connecting on a deeper level. We're missing that. We're feeling that sense of isolation. We're feeling that sense of, it's just disconnected is the best way I can frame it. And so I would say, as you're kicking off a new school year, invest intentional time in going out and talking to people and getting to know them on a personal level.
How did you do that? Like, mm-hmm. what kind of practices did you put into play with that?
Yeah. I'm not gonna sugarcoat it. It was hard. It was hard. As a principal, I feel like I did a better job at it than I did as a superintendent. Mm. And as a principal, what I would do is I would schedule time to do classroom visits. Mm-hmm. But I've learned over the years, I am a type 3 Enneagram. So I'm very driven. I'm very, very driven. And so even whenever I did those walkthroughs in the classrooms or things like that, it was all business. And we've got to get away from that. Not to say that those things aren't important, because they absolutely are. But my last principal role was at Sangamon Valley Middle School. And one of the things I valued most about my time there is just the way that staff, I interacted with the staff and the staff interacted with me and each other. It was a family. We cared about one another. We knew each other on that more personal level. You know, to this day, there are some people that have went to different schools after I left, and we stay connected on Facebook. We see their families growing up. We care about each other. And that's what people want. That's why people stay in school districts. That's the best retention strategy that you can have, is truly knowing that you are supported and that your environment is safe and that you are valued. Like I said before, everybody wants to feel important and like they're contributing to a better future.
What are some things that you did on that campus to kind of foster that feeling of connection and I see you and I care about you as a person?
Yeah. was just check-ins. We did a lot of just check-ins. I served on, there were student assistance programs, and I showed up to those meetings. Whenever there was staff development things, I didn't just schedule it. I went and I learned with my teachers and my staff. We had fun together. There were a lot of traditions that the staff already had in place before I got there, but I participated with them. I went to those things. We had Christmas games. They did those kinds of things. And I was there and I participated with them. And it was a win-win. I know I can speak for myself. I truly valued the relationships that I had there, because as a school leader, sometimes you are dehumanized and you're not seen as a person. And so for me, that really provided me that space to show up and to care and to feel like I was part of a community. But I think it did the same thing for our teachers and our staff and also our students. I recently got a graduation invitation from one of my students during that time. And I sent her a copy of my book. I wasn't able to go because of a prior commitment, but I sent her a copy of my book. And she's a young lady that is incredibly intelligent, very gifted artistically. And I really think that she's going to do great wow. things in the future.
That is really cool. So, so Brandy, tell us what area of where are you located? I'm just curious. Tell our listeners, where are you?
I'm in Illinois. Do you know where Litchfield, Illinois is? No.
Yes.
How about St. Louis, Missouri? Okay. I'm in Illinois. I'm on the Illinois side, but I'm about an hour from St. Louis, Missouri.
That is really cool. I have just really enjoyed hearing you talk about the work that you've done. It reminds me of when I was principal, we were connected with character.org and we were a national school of character. And so the work that you do is very much aligned within the realms of those principles. And so I think that would be very interesting for different leaders and schools to hear about the work that you do, because it aligns quite nicely within that realm. Has anyone ever had a conversation with you about that?
No, this is the first time I've heard about that.
Yeah, you definitely reminded me of it. They have 11 principles, and within that work, a part of it is the relationship piece, most definitely. And you have a lot of those characteristics. So I just wanted to mention that right now.
One of the things that I have just started working on during my time as a principal, I got introduced to culture assessments, and we did that in my district. But I'm going to take it a step further. I offer culture assessments, but I also offer wellness assessments, where we assess through a system of hope each one of those components. And when I go into schools, I'm just going to launch this and start piloting this this fall. So it's really brand new. But really the key elements of that, like I said, is it goes into that framework, but it builds those resilient leaders, and it helps them to connect habits that anchor their daily practices to spark that long-term change. It connects the optimistic outlook for navigating adversity with grace and grit, that purpose piece for setting meaningful spaces, you know, cultures and communities that really connect people and strengthen that organization, the organization's resilience. And by doing these things, we're going to build the excellence, maximize that excellence piece, and help people to operate in a growth mindset.
I absolutely love that. And we work with different districts around the state, and I could see where you would be you could be of help in the recruitment and retention of leaders, because I do feel just retiring from the principalship, this is one piece. I was fortunate to be in a district that located in the center of San Antonio that had a leader that had many like-minded thoughts as you. and just relationships were truly at the core. Relationships were at the core of all of the work that we did. Even our hiring practices were based on the relationship part. We used the Perceiver from Gallup as a part of the hiring process. And so you have a lot to offer specifically in the realm of really fostering leaders, because there aren't a lot of people like you. Typically, they focus on the child, which is important, don't get me wrong, but there aren't a lot. I haven't been exposed to a lot of work that really centers around the adults and the leader part of it.
Mm-hmm. And that self-efficacy piece, I find so fascinating, of how you foster that within yourself, of really feeling like you can do this. Right. How did I wind up here? How am I the person?
Well, because as leaders, we all have imposter syndrome. We feel like we're not good enough. Like who the heck am I? Like, I'm leading this school or I'm leading this district. Who the heck put me in charge of this?
Well, and the funny thing is, when you really look at that idea of belief or self-efficacy, mm-hmm. it's the law of attraction. So when you get caught in that mm-hmm. cycle, you know, of negative thinking, or you spend time with limiting beliefs, you attract Absolutely. What you spend your time thinking about. And so we have to put leaders, there's so much research, because I don't know what it is in Texas, but in Illinois, the tenure of a leader is typically 3 to 4 years. And then they turn over. But change doesn't happen until that fourth or fifth year. So we are viciously turning over and cycling out our leaders. And we need strong, resilient leaders who are going to be able to support a resilient organization, attract and retain good staff. And until we have those systems firmly in place, starting from the inside out, we're not going to be able to help kids be the best that they could be. So it goes back to those four pillars, okay? The habits, that optimistic outlook or the mindset, the purpose and the passion piece to create the excellence. I say we have to start with very, very simple habits or practices. And we have to invest in ourselves. So the first very tangible, easy step that leaders could make today is go over to Amazon and pick up my book and read it. And you can see in that book how this came to life with me as the leader, and also mm-hmm. stories about students that I served and teachers that I served over the years. For instance, one of the stories that I think about with that sense of hope is I had a student named Reagan, and Reagan had gotten into drugs. She was hanging out with the wrong crowd. She was failing in school. Her principal had that belief in her. So he referred her to me for counseling, and I showed up. And Reagan said, I've had other counselors. It didn't work. You're wasting your time. And I said, I understand. And I continued to show up. And over time, she saw that I was committed and that I was going to consistently show up. And she started to change. She started to connect with me. We started to build that relationship. And I'm still connected with her. She is a grown adult right now with 3 beautiful children, a business of her own. Everybody would have thought, with some of the choices she was making back then, she wouldn't make it. But it was just those simple habits of showing up, encouraging her, and helping her see the greatness within. And eventually she saw that not only I believed in her, but her principal believed in her and other people believed in her. And she was able to chart a better way forward. So that's that sense of hope. Sometimes we have to hold hope for other people until they can hold it for themselves. And then building that system of hope, it starts with self-reflection. And each one of my chapters starts with self-reflection. Like you said, Jerry, as principals, as superintendents, as school leaders, we have imposter syndrome. But if we don't find a way to believe in ourselves, How can right. other people believe in us? It starts with self-efficacy and leader efficacy. And we start that with the habit of self-reflection and then putting in those meaningful practices or habits. They're simple, but they allow us to consistently take care of ourselves. I learned it the hard way. I learned most of my lessons the hard way, but I hit a wall in leadership where I was pushing too hard and I wasn't taking care of myself. And I was forced to take a step back and to step away for a minute and pause and get some clarity and take care of myself. But we can put simple habits into place. Meditation and movement. Those are two very simple habits that we can put into place to take care of ourselves. An act of gratitude. When we send just a simple text to somebody to say that we're grateful for them, that helps to rewire our brain to fuel a mindset of hopefulness. And so it's just simple habits that fuel a mindset of optimism, of hope, that continue to build that culture that we want to create for our students and our staff.
So they, I see how each pillar kind of cascades into the next one of you create these habits that help you create that optimistic outlook. I love that. So let's talk about the P and a little bit of the E. Yeah.
So the P is the purpose, the passion, and the perseverance. So, you know, my purpose was the loss of my brother. It was a tragedy. It was born out of a tragedy. And so I am a huge proponent for turning that pain into purpose. And with the P part, if you are connected to your what is so much more meaningful. So when you know what your purpose is, when you know why you're doing what you're doing, you can withstand some of the less desirable components of the job. And let's be honest, every job has facets that we don't love. But when you know why you're doing what you're doing, it helps you to persevere. And then finding what lights you up. What are you passionate about? Think about the last time that you were really passionate about something that you were doing. And for me, that was helping people. I get passionate about the idea of building people up and encouraging them and helping them build the life that they want. My mom died at 44. My brother drowned when he was 13. Time is so important, and we are not promised tomorrow. So let's make the best of it, and let's lead a life of purpose with passion so that we can have that life that we want. And then with the E part, Beth, it's just simply consistently getting better, even if it's just 1% better every day. Consistently growing. When you think that you've arrived, think again, because we're all becoming. We are all becoming. And so it's just a consistent practice helping you get better day after day. And I believe those habits, that mindset, that purpose and passion piece, they all help us to achieve a life of excellence. Yeah, I have a self-reflection tool. And in that tool, it just kind of walks an individual through some prompts to consider why is this happening? Why am I feeling depleted and burnt out? And sometimes it's as simple as I'm trying to burn the candle at both ends. You know, I'm working 8, 9, 10 hours a day. Then I'm running around, taxiing my kid, and then I'm taking care of my dad or my mom or whatever. And just looking at what you're doing and then asking for help. Ooh. As a school leader, let me be honest with you, that was hard for me to ask for help. And it's okay. Let me just say that. It's okay to ask for help. Sometimes we have to identify what can somebody else do to take off of my plate. I believe in executive coaching, and I've had an executive coach for the last 5 years. One of the things he consistently reminded me of was, Brandy, take off your cape. You're not Superwoman. It's okay to ask for help. And that's a valuable reminder. We don't have to do it all, and we don't have to be everything.
I agree with that, Brandy. And I think of, as a principal, I would often meet with teachers or staff members that were struggling. What was the one thing we would offer them? Our employee assistance program. I don't know about you, but it would be like we always had that to offer. And what you made me think, one of the most pivotal parts within my leadership career was when I actually was one of those people. I knocked on the door and took, you know, accessed our, you know, the help as a principal. And that was very powerful going through it, because I had never in my life thought I needed to have someone to talk to. And then two, being able to share that with my teachers when I would meet one-on-one and they were struggling, and I was able to share my story of, hey guys, we have employee assistance. And I talked about my journey, and that, and really there was like an aha moment, like, oh my gosh, you seem like you have it all together. And I'm like, no, internally there are struggles that are happening. And so you made me think of, we are the last ones as leaders to model that it's okay to not be okay at times. And then what can we do about that to support ourselves? And you just you just posted a blog on our responsive learning website. I saw it pop up, which our listeners, if they are listening, literally, I don't know, Brandy, if you know this, but the date on it is May 27th, 2025, when it was just published on, and it's called From Burnout to Breakthrough, Why Educators Need a System of Hope.
Love it.
H-O-P-E. And so for our listeners, if they are wanting to get some snippets of what you just talked about, there are some links to that on our website in your, it's a 6-minute read. If anyone is listening, they go to our website and we can drop the link here, but you can find out about Brandy, get a snippet of her work. And then you have a couple of things on there that people could use as takeaways.
Yes, some free resources, and they can always connect with me at my website at sparkhopeedu.com. I truly believe that when we help to make our leaders well, that impact is exponential.
Yeah. You know,
they touch so many lives and they influence so many people that just by pouring into our leaders, we can really help make education better for our future.
Yeah. I keep thinking of that oxygen mask, like our leaders have to put that mask on before they can, like, and it's the same thing with wellness and health and mental health. And if we're not taking care of ourselves, we can't really take care of any other people, but also like we're worth taking care of.
Absolutely. And Jerry, you sharing that story made me think of a quote by Brené Brown. She says that owning your story and loving yourself through it is one of the most powerful things we can do. And I think that the reason that it's so powerful is because in the act of sharing that story, you gave people hope, because they're looking at you and they're seeing that you made it. They're looking at you and you lived what they're living and you gave them hope. And that's what this is all about. It's building that community of hope, so we can help to inspire and motivate and encourage and build up people so that they continue to do the important work that they're doing and pouring into our children.
Absolutely.
Who are our future.
You have truly been an inspiration, Brandy. I don't know about you, Beth, but I've learned so much just listening to you. I can't wait to share your book with others that I still am in close contact with. That are in those leadership roles, doing the work. I just can't thank you enough for saying yes to be a part of this time with us.
Well, thank you for having me. I've enjoyed being on the podcast with both of you, and you are truly a light in this world. And so keep on spreading hope.
Thanks, Brandy.
Thanks so much, Brandy.